welcome to the Tennessee on Supply Chain Management podcast. Listen in as co-hosts Ted Stank and Tom Goldsby take a leap onto the ships of supply chain, crowd surf in the long lines of meeting holiday demand, and wade into the depths of warehouse inventory buildup. They'll cover all the relevant and current topics blocking the canal of your minds and discuss industry issues that keep you up at night. If you enjoy the show, download and subscribe to Tennessee on Supply Chain Management, wherever you listen to podcasts. Without further ado, let's begin our show, where you'll hear what you'd least expect from the people you want to hear it from the most. Our co-hosts, Ted and Tom.
Welcome, listeners, to the fourth episode of Tennessee on Supply Chain Management podcast. I'm joined here today with my good friend and colleague, Tom Goldsby, and we're going to start out with our perspectives on what we're hearing right now. Today is early day in February, what we're hearing about what's going on in the supply chain world and the broader business and global environment that impacts supply chain. Tom, what kind of things are you hearing?
Well, Ted, you know, before we got on this broadcast, we were talking about what we had been seeing and hearing, and something we were struck by was just the number and volume of mixed messages out there. You know, as you point out, we're pretty early in this new year, and we're trying to look back, make sense of where we were in the holidays and where things are going early in this 2022 year. I came across an article in the New York Times titled "A Normal Supply Chain: It's Unlikely in 2022," and it painted a pretty dire picture of what's going to be in store for us for the balance of this year. And then meanwhile, you countered with a Wall Street Journal article that seemed to suggest there are a lot of bright spots out there in the economy and also in our supply chains.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, Tom, that I think we probably should spend a little bit of time talking about is where do we get our news? What do we trust? What do we hear about the supply chain? I'm an optimist by nature, but man, some of the stuff over the last several weeks and of course the last 2 years in general, it just kind of beat you down. Omicron's coming and BA1's been with us and now BA2 variant's coming and LA Long Beach has 793,000 ships off the coast and it's all happening on the East Coast now too. And it's just like, wow, where does this end? And so I think it is important for us to scratch a bit deeper under the surface and find out just what is happening. My take on it is we have problems, right? There are problems in the supply chain. We still have demand abnormally high for a lot of things. Companies are restocking because inventory to sales ratios are low, and we're trying to cram more through our supply chains than we have the capacity to handle for various reasons. Shutdowns due to Omicron or Delta or just COVID in general. Overall labor issue trends because people leaving the workforce. We can't get people to come to work. Warehousing space is at ridiculous levels of low availability and nowhere to go. We're all familiar with the port issues. But I do think that supply chain managers traditionally deal with the punches. We've been punched really hard in the last 2 years, but we're dealing with it. People are out there making decisions and not laying down saying we're all going to die. There are bright spots out there. The Wall Street Journal article you're referring to is that we're starting to see consumer spending on travel and services increase. That was one of the big reasons why our goods supply chains got so bogged down was because we stopped spending on things that we used to spend half our money on and we spent it all on goods and we couldn't bring them in. Well, guess what? As we start emerging from COVID, people are vaccinated and boosted and aren't as afraid. We're spending more on travel and the services industry. That's something we need to do. On the other side of the equation, capacity is starting to return. In one simple example, investment in semiconductors is up. Qualcomm, AMD, Intel are all announcing increases in their capacity to produce chips. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's happening. It's there. Omicron hasn't had a big impact on global trade. Most global trade statistics are where they're expected to be pre-pandemic. So the world is starting to return to normal. Will we ever get back to normal? No, there's a new normal, but I don't think it's as bleak as some of our front page news would like us to believe.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ted. And you and I have been contributors to quite a few media outlets over the past several months. And it's funny when I try to bring forward that message that the supply chains on historic basis are performing pretty close to on par, in some cases by some metrics, even above par, better than par on things like container port processing and things like that. I know a lot of in the media say, yeah, 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 but tell me the bad stuff. And that's right. Where they tend to dwell on some of those issues. And I think you recounted them quite well. Hey, one issue that I know our listeners are really wanting to hear an update on. In the last episode, we talked about your travails in trying to acquire a new car. And we're about a month down the road. I seem to recall that it was promised to you to be produced in Japan and ship overseas to you, reach you in North Carolina. Our listeners are on pins and needles wanting to know, where is your car, Ted?
Well, that's a very timely question, Tom. Yeah, we ordered this car, I want to say around December 28th. And to another point, not great visibility. The dealership in Jacksonville, North Carolina, couldn't exactly tell where the car was. They weren't sure if it was in Japan or in California. All they knew was that it was not yet finished because it didn't have a vehicle identification number yet, which I inferred meant that it probably was done and didn't have a semiconductor chip in it, which we've read that a lot of auto manufacturers are doing, right? And the person at the dealership told me, once we get this chip in it, you'll probably have it by the end of January. And I'm thinking, if it's in Japan, there ain't no way we're going to have it by the end of January. So partly the conversation here is about visibility. If we knew where it was, we'd have a better insight. But the big news is we got a call yesterday, February 2nd, that our car was in and we can come pick it up anytime we want. So a little over 4 weeks, which, you know, I've been talking about this throughout the whole pandemic, that we need to readjust our expectations. If you had told an auto buyer back in probably the 1980s that there was going to be a car that they were going to order and you'd have it in 4 weeks, probably pretty darn happy with that, right? We've just become so used to, as consumers, instantaneous gratification that to think of a 4 week delivery time is unheard of. So yes, the good news, Tom, is that car is in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and we're going to pick it up probably on Saturday morning.
Cue the bugles. Well, fantastic. Well, congratulations on that.
So there's a case study in supply chain performance, right?
Definitely is. And something I'm intrigued with is that notion that the dealer didn't know where the car was. Visibility, which seems to be the most fundamental input you could have, is get a sense for where a near finished automobile is, which side of the ocean in which it's found, right? You know, something that seems to be overlooked as we try to figure out how to match supply and demand is the role of supply chain planning. And I teach master's level courses in supply chain planning for our MBA and online students here at UT. And we start off with, if you can't see it, it's hard to manage it. And that's why the supply chain visibility arena has just exploded over the course of the pandemic. What are your thoughts, Ted, in terms of how we can get a better handle on not only where stuff is, but where it ought to be when we promise it to our customers?
Yeah, I mean, my experience and a little bit of knowledge of the automotive industry is the dealers have a good opportunity to look across other dealerships for finished cars, but they don't have a whole lot of visibility back in the supply chain above the production level. And that certainly was the case here. They could see that there was a car out there. It was promised to them, but they weren't exactly sure where it was. So I think it shows like there's these barriers at different areas of the supply chain as we have goods flowing down into becoming finished goods and then going out into distribution networks. I definitely think it's required. Tom, you and I have worked on some projects with some of our partners about increasing the cadence of planning processes, particularly at times when demand is highly uncertain and not being predictable like it had been in previous periods. So let's run our planning process more frequently so we get fresher data and don't look as far out because that's more unpredictable. I think those are really good techniques we need to think about as we move forward, not maybe for every product, but when we hit demand turbulence where we can't predict, let's run our processes. Use that data that's out there that we're using at best 50-year-old processes in planning to try to understand. Let's change our planning process mindset and use that data more frequently. To me, my understanding of lean is that that's always been what lean was trying to do, was to get us to a more paced perspective where we're trying to time things based on what we think is demand is going to be instead of having all this just in case. But lean has taken a lot of heavy hits these days, particularly as it relates to planning and flow and things like that. I know you've worked a lot in lean. What are your thoughts? Do you think the arrows that lean has taken are justified?
Well, you know, I could certainly offer my perspectives, and I've got a lot of writing out there, but I'd love to bring in our guest today, with whom I've collaborated quite a bit in those writings and engagements. It's our dear friend, Robert Martichenko, who is the founder and CEO of LeanCore. LeanCore became a major brand in applying lean thinking throughout the supply chain. And Robert founded that company, I think about 16 years ago, and sold the company to Transplace, a major player in third-party logistics arena. And of course, Transplace got acquired by Uber Freight late last year. But Robert is an accomplished author, speaker. He also won the CSCMP Distinguished Service Award some years back. And by the way, if you haven't heard his award acceptance speech, you got to look it up on YouTube. It's the best acceptance speech anywhere at any time. He invoked his two lovely daughters in that effort. Robert, welcome to Tennessee on Supply Chain Management Podcast. It's great to have you with us. And I'm going to just forward that question that Ted teed up for me and hand it over to you. You know, we're hearing that lean is dead. It's under great challenge right now. It's been thrown under the bus pretty routinely in a lot of media and also in business settings where folks are challenging the very premise of lean. And I think you've got some veteran ideas on the subject. So welcome, Robert, to the show.
Hey, guys, it's my pleasure. It's actually been a dream of mine to be on the Ted and Tom show. So here I am, one of my bucket list things finally off the list.
Hey, Robert, welcome. Hey, let me just interject to Tom's talk about your Distinguished Service Award acceptance speech. I think that there are two great acceptance speeches in history. One of them is Sally Fields getting the Oscar saying, "You like me, you really like me." And then there was Robert Martichenko's acceptance speech of the Distinguished Service Award. Those two stand out in history.
Well, thanks. It's still probably the most memorable moment of my life in so many respects. And just with the group of people we were there, and the work with CSCMP over the years is a big, big part of my professional life as well. And it was fantastic. Thank you. But back to our topic at hand here, there's a quote that rightfully or wrongfully, I think, is it attributed to Mark Twain, where he once said, "The rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated." Well, I'm feeling the same way, that the rumors of Lean's death have been greatly exaggerated. In fact, in some respects, you know, even though it's been almost 30 years since the book Lean Thinking came out from Womack and Jones, in some respects, lean thinking is even still at its adolescence maturity stage. We're still just really starting to understand this huge, huge body of knowledge that we call the essence of lean or the essence of lean thinking.
So, Robert, where do you think the misconception lies? Why do so many people maybe have it wrong? And how do we maybe portray lean in its proper light for ready application these days?
Well, one of the first things is, you know, the old saying that words matter, right? Even your conversation about where we're getting facts and the media wanting to be more negative than positive. What is that about? That is about words. What are people saying? So if we kind of get through the muddiness of it and have an appreciation that maybe people writing these articles really aren't content experts and they really don't know exactly what it is that they're writing about, which is okay because they're writers and they have to write on many, many topics and they're rushed for time these days. What's happened is they're taking something that we know is called just-in-time inventory replenishment systems and they're just labeling it lean. And that's the first mistake that's happening. Lean has cultural elements, it has strategic elements, it has tactical elements. And the essence of lean is to build cultures that focus on continuous improvement and creating meaningful work environments and problem solving. How on earth could an organization that's creating a culture of continuous improvement, somehow could that be blamed on empty shell? So let's go down to what we're really talking about is just in time, which is a tributary of lean thinking. Just in time is just a logistics technique. It's not a philosophy. It's not even a strategy. It's a tactical technique to replenish inventory based on consumption as opposed to replenishing inventory based on long-term forecast models. And if you really get technical, JIT really is even just an inventory strategy that really got its roots inside the four walls of a factory. Where it was even brought externally was really in Japan and smaller countries where suppliers were down the street. So in some respects, they were, in fact, in the building. This idea, this notion that organizations have global supply chains running just in time, it's just simply incorrect. It's not true. And so where the first misconception is that we've somehow got this term out there, lean global supply chains. Well, that's an oxymoron. Lean and global supply chains are mutually exclusive. And I think this is where the first misconception is.
Yeah, like you made reference to what we often regard as the Bible of Lean Thinking, a book by that very title, Lean Thinking, Vanishing Waste by Womack and Jones back in 93. And somewhere in there, I think you've pointed out from the scripture, if you will, that lean and oceans don't mix. So this notion of taking Kanban, card-based replenishment beyond the four walls of a facility and trying to stretch it thousands of miles with weeks of lead time, yeah, it doesn't take long to realize that's a system that just can't really hold up, particularly when you don't have consistent demand. We were talking about the need to shorten the planning horizons, and hence you need to develop supply chain strategies that adapt. Now, that said, where do you see lean thinking, as you mentioned, the culture, continuous improvement, problem solving, meaningful work? I mean, these are things that I think, wow, that's exactly what we need right now, isn't it?
Well, that question, I think, has roots of more vision and strategy. And so, but let's just pause on that one for a few seconds and stay at the tactical. What's going to come from this, in my belief, is that we're going to realize that the real culprit with the last couple of years and what we learned through the pandemic wasn't a just in time, but rather it was the extended lead times. Because what happened was that a demand for products went up 100,000, 10,000% in some cases. And our economies, by and large, are capitalist economies, which means that they are driven by efficiency and effectiveness, doing the right things and doing them the right way. And no organization is going to prepare themselves for demand spikes like we saw. It just wasn't reasonable for the general public to think that this is some supply chain failure, because it's not. Our supply chains were designed based on a kind of known demand patterns. And because we are efficient and effective, they were designed for that. And then to try to become more productive, we extended lead times over the last 30 years, chasing low unit costs. And this chase caught up with us now. So that's, I believe, the logistics part of this that's going to come out of it that will really go to the body of lean thinking is going to be, how do we reduce lead times? Because lead times are the true culprit of the business failures that we're in now. And I say business failures very, very intentionally. These aren't supply chain failures. Every single business decision that's made in an organization, and I don't want to talk in absolutes for fear of, you know, somebody saying that's not true. So let me pull back a little bit. Virtually every business decision made in an organization is manifested in the supply chain. So if you make a poor marketing decision, you don't get value or waste in marketing. You get value or waste in the supply chain. If you make a poor product development or a poor supplier selection decision, you don't get value or waste in product development or in purchasing, you get value and waste in the supply chain. So what we are now calling supply chain failures, they're failures that are manifesting in the supply chain, but they are business failures. They are the decision to build a factory somewhere 15 years ago. They are the decision to get rid of a supplier who was really good and dependable, but they were just a little bit too much money. And those are business decisions that are now being manifested in the supply chain. So these aren't supply chain failures, these are business failures. But to raise up to your question, Tom, there's clearly going to have to be some problem solving done. There's clearly going to have to be some continuous improvement done to processes and so forth, and the people side, which I hope we get to as well. So if continuous improvement and problem solving based on our last 2 years of experience is going to be the new charter, then what a better place to go than the Book of Lean, because the Book of Lean has formalized problem solving in its scientific method of the use of plan, do, check, act, and other very fantastic problem solving models.
I just want to stand up and say amen. I've been moved this morning, Robert. That's fantastic. It's certainly a time of reflection here, it seems. Like you say, business decisions that were made 15, 20 years ago stretching our supply chains to what we now recognize as maybe unsustainable lengths, and certainly counter to this notion of lead time reductions. What do you think? Is this situation presenting that opportunity sufficient enough to reflect and reconsider some of those decisions that mean, hey, not short-term fixes here. We're talking about long-term overtures about changing supply chain configuration and the strategies that we employ them.
Well, I've been accused in my life of, wearing not just one pair of rose-colored glasses, but wearing three or four shades all at the same time. And I am an internal optimist. And for, considering that I spent 16, 17 years building Linkor, which, I was able to experience the highest of highs, but I also experienced the lowest of lows as well. That experience you'd think would kind of beat me up a little bit, and which it did, but I'm still feeling like an optimist. However, with that optimism can possibly come a notion of not facing realities. And the realities are that the global supply chain isn't just a supply chain of finished goods now. It's also a supply chain of the tier one, tier two, tier three, and four raw materials of these goods. So if we're going to look at lead time and we're going to do it in any meaningful way, and that could result in us determining that we could be building product in the countries in which the product is demanded. And I say that intentionally as well, because this should not turn into a North American patriotic thing where it's about bringing factories to America or Canada. It should be about how do we produce and procure the materials for that production in the regions in which the consumption is. That's at the heart of the matter. As a lean thinker, we're not anti-global, we're anti-lead time. And so to be global is just a case of where you're sitting. If I'm sitting in Australia, then global feels like America. If I'm sitting in America, global feels like China. It's not about being anti that distance. It's about being anti-lead time based on where consumption is.
Robert, we started this conversation talking about some of the things we're seeing companies do with increasing their planning cadences from, say, running their planning process once a month to running it once a week, and reducing their time horizon of planning from, say, 4 months to 1 month. To do that, you've got to do what you just said, which is speed up your lead times, your cycle times, right? The reason why we have 4 month time horizons in planning is to give us a long enough time to get that low unit cost economy of scale operation. And it's costing us in a lot of other ways. And I think one of the things that Lean does is make you see where those other costs are coming, generally in the form of not being able to achieve sales because you don't have the right stuff, or having too much stuff that nobody else wants. And boy, that has been a gospel that we've been talking about for a long time. And thank you for being a preacher of that gospel. Tom invoked religion. I felt religious as well when you were talking before. So let's have another amen for that.
Amen.
I might see a mega church in our future here.
Several in different regions, depending on where our demand marks are.
You know what? A mega church comes from thousands of micro churches.
That's right. We wrote a book called Epic about global supply chains and looking at economic, political infrastructure, and business competency, labor skills, back in 2014, and we were calling then for a regionalization of supply chains, that we needed to have multiple supply chains located next to the largest demand markets around the globe. I think sometimes, unfortunately, the way human behavior is it takes a crisis like we've experienced in the last 2 years to incentivize change. There's not enough pain otherwise, and now we've had pain, so.
Yeah, and I also just want to call out Robert's effort. He co-authored a book with former Bosch CEO Peter Marks back in 2016 called Discovering Hidden Profit, Extended Value Stream Decision Making. And you called that out, more than 5 years ago, that we're making these business decisions that are manifesting in the supply chain. And there's going to be, some hell to pay if we don't remedy the situation.
I was talking with an executive friend of mine the other day, and he's a big fan of the Discovering Hidden Profit book. And he said, Robert, maybe it was just a little ahead of its time, and now we'll get some runway with this notion that it's time for the four core functions of a business being strategy, product development, sales and marketing, and order fulfillment, which is our supply chain operations. It's time for those four core processes to stop working independently, to stop competing against each other, and rather to be one system and one team across the entire end-to-end supply chain?
Well, I think also it's important for us to recognize that these supply chain systems are composed of people. And Robert, you alluded to this earlier. I know that is a major passion for you. You also have a book titled People and the Role of People in our Organizations and Supply Chains. And now that you've sold your business, I think that that's become a major avenue of pursuit for you, is an effort to kind of enlighten the role of people in our supply chain operations. Can you share us a little bit about what you're looking at there and what you hope to achieve?
Well, thanks, Tom. And really, it's kind of like, what's 2.0, right? What's Robert 2.0? And now that I, you know, want to take some time and reflect on my own professional career and say, you know, how can I help going forward? And at the same time, what we're now seeing is an absolute, I don't even know what we call it, a learning experience around workforce and workforce development. And I think that we need to really get our arms around the future of work, the future of workforce development. And in some respects, it's, you know, the future of America and Canada and the future of the world, because work is so much about what our countries and the world is all about. And I think that what we were recognizing is that we spent probably a few hundred years creating two classes of workers. And if you just go back, and as I'm doing my own reading and researching and talking to people now, like, just think about the workforce now that is saying to organizations, and in some respects to industry and society, saying, we're not going to take this anymore. Just think of the names of them. They've been called blue collar workers, non-exempt workers, hourly team members, and a new term now because of the pandemic is frontline workers. And in fact, of all of them, that's the only one that probably has some sense of dignity and value of what the folks are actually doing for us. On the other side, I read one which just I thought was appalling, where, you know, it called white collar workers knowledge workers, somehow, I guess, equating that our frontline workers don't have knowledge, and see how that works the next time your HVAC goes out on you. So we are at a day of reckoning with this. We need to become one system, one team. And I think that where this is going to go, and I know there's hundreds and thousands of people talking about this, it sure isn't just me. It's a big conversation. And the conversation has terms in it like meaningful work and cultures of respect. And these are kind of the terms you'll see out there that is the community talking about this. I think that it's time that organizations are going to have to create environments and cultures that are based on dignity and respect and meaningfulness, which means meaningful work as well. And it also means if these organizations commit and invest to create these environments, then we're also going to have to get rid of these HR structures that have two different types of employees, this blue collar versus white collar. And then we're going to have to teach people how to engage with these environments once organizations make the investments to really, truly transform culture from one of just managing cost to creating cultures of dignity and respect.
Well, Robert, we can count on you to be at the forefront of that effort. If you bring the same passion and creativity to that that you've brought to lean thinking over the past 25 years, I think we're going to be in good shape. And any way we can help you out here at the University of Tennessee, you know, you can count on us.
Absolutely. Robert, thank you so much for your insights. These were great.
My pleasure, guys. I was really looking forward to this. And you and the university do a fantastic job. It's been my pleasure to be part of your whole team over a good part of 20 years now. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Robert. With that, we're going to bring a wrap. But hey, just one more final plug here. Robert and I co-authored a piece in the most recent Supply Chain Quarterly about that notion of lean being under attack. We titled the piece, Shortages Aplenty, Is Lean the Problem or the Answer? So you can see a written dialogue there about our collective thoughts on the matter. And with that, Ted, what do you think? Is it time to put a wrap on this episode?
Yeah, let's put a wrap on it. I think people are probably tired of hearing about you and I. Glad that they had a chance to hear Robert. Everybody, thank you for joining us. Look forward to our fifth episode in about another month. And in the meantime, once again, we really invite any comments, questions, topics that you'd like to see us address. Send them to gsci@utk.edu. Thanks again, Robert. We will see you soon.
listening to Tennessee on Supply Chain Management. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe via your favorite listening platform, such as iTunes or Spotify. And if you have questions, we'd love to hear from our listeners. Leave a reply in our show notes at gscipodcast.com or email your questions to gsci@utk.edu. Join us next time in our pursuit to prove that supply chain management is more fun than you think.